weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to the two Johnnies in Africa for the afternoon entertainment. It is Thursday, March 28th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, we'll hear from Ireland women's rugby star Niamh Jones as Ali Donnelly. Previews round two of the Women's Six Nations. Eileen Gleeson revealed her Ireland women's national team squad for the upcoming Euro qualifiers against France and England. We'll hear the thoughts of the Ireland manager as well as speaking to Rebecca Cray on the international team and previewing a big weekend of League of Ireland Women's Premier Division action. Jeff Shepherd has his eye on America and Shane Stokes tells us who to watch out for at the start of the cycling season. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. Rebecca Cray is here to chat football. I hope you are keeping well on this Thursday evening. Rebecca Cray, how are you?
Good, Shane. Good. Today, how are you?
Good to hear. I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well. Eileen Gleeson has named her Republic of Ireland squad for what is going to be two tough matches, to say at the very least. Defender Niamh Fahey and midfielder Tyler Tolan return to the squad after missing two international friendly games against Italy and Wales in February. Anna Patton has been called up to the squad for the first time but is awaiting international clearance from FIFA before being declared eligible for the two qualifiers. The 24-year-old defender, who plays for Aston Villa in the English Women's Super League, qualifies through her Donegal-born grandfather and Galway-born grandmother. Defender Tara O'Hanlon is still working through return to play protocol, while midfielder Sinead Farrelly and Jamie Finn are unavailable with quad and knee injuries respectively. And also really, really disappointing news for Chloe Mustaki. She has been ruled out for the rest of the Women's Super League season with a hip injury, so she wasn't in contention for Eileen Gleeson's squad, of course, as well. I mentioned there Anna Patton. Rebecca, I know you've had wind of this. This has been in the pipeline for quite some time. Before I get your thoughts on it, let's hear Eileen Gleeson on the inclusion of Anna Patton in the squad.
We've been chatting with Anna on an ongoing basis. She qualifies through family, and we've been, you know, in the process of our eligibility process. So, yeah, I mean, look, Anna, I think, can be a great addition to the squad. Playing at a really high level, top five league in the world, and can be a great addition to our back line. You know, strong, competitive, good pathway through her youth to Arsenal and then into Aston Villa, so can bring a lot of good characteristics to our team.
So, Rebecca Cray, Anna Patton, a good addition to the squad?
Yeah, I think so. Look, she's fresh coming in, you know, 24 years of age, very young. You know, we have got defenders in there, seasoned defenders, let's just say, that you know, might be in the kind of final third of their
careers,
gameplay, yeah, their careers. But yeah, look, Anna Patton has a really good career, obviously through the pathway at Arsenal. Is now playing with Villa. She's played underage with England, most recently in the under-23s. So she's experienced on the international front, has good experience already at club level, you know, with Arsenal and Aston Villa. And I know, like, you know, it's been something that has been ongoing over the last little while. She's was quite close to Kate McCabe at Arsenal as well, so I'm sure she had a word in her ear over the course of time, finding out she had grandparents from Ireland. So yeah, look, we'll be interesting to see, and hopefully she gets a few minutes now in the next few weeks.
Former under-21 international with England. She won a bronze with England at the under-20 World Cup in 2018. Is this a case of someone who has just realised, I'm not good enough for England, let's play for Ireland? Or do you feel, from being in her company on a couple of occasions, I think I'm right in saying, Rebecca, that this is someone that genuinely wants to play for Ireland?
Yeah, like, we've had kind of, I suppose, jokes the last 2 years or so. I remember at the Euros final, there was a gang of us went over, and obviously would have been in her company, and there was a few chants going around. Her nickname is Patsy, you know, Patsy, get your passport kind of thing. But and eventually she has. But no, look, I know she, it might be a bit of both, you know. I don't know if it was a case that there's such a huge pull over in England, you know, especially in the defender section, let's just say. And she might have looked at you know, having that option there of coming into the Irish setup. And look, we welcome her with open arms, given the calibre that she's played around, and obviously that she plays at the minute. So yeah, look, why not?
One key player to Ireland is, of course, Katie McCabe. Now, Eileen Gleeson has said that she is factoring into her plans the possibility that captain Katie McCabe will travel to Australia with Arsenal for an end of season friendly the week before two crucial Euro 2025 qualifiers. So not ideal preparation. Here is the Irish head coach speaking about that.
The short answer is no, we haven't spoken to Arsenal yet. We have it obviously factored into our planning processes that if she is in it, but yeah, we'll have to wait and have that conversation with the club whether she will or she will, she won't be involved in that. It's far from ideal, you know, and I think, you know, Serena and other coaches have mentioned it in their squad announcements and conversations. Yeah, I mean, it's a long travel trip with a quick turnaround, so, you know, it's directly post the end of the season, straight into a really long travel trip with a quick turnaround directly before qualifiers. So yeah, it poses a real challenge for the player and for us as well. But yeah, if it happens, we'll have to manage it and we'll have to, you know, best prepare.
A week after the domestic season finishes, the A-League will be finished as well. And Arsenal travelling over for what I can only assume is a marketing friendly to try and expand the brand.
Scandalous, to be honest with you. It's one word that comes to mind in terms of that. Like, it's, I know they have got Aussie players, you know, with Caitlin Ford and Steph Catley and obviously Kyra Cooney-Cross. But like, I'm sure they're going to be involved with Australia again. They've got to see them through the whole World Cup play. You know, they're going to be playing the Olympics as well. It just, I can't fathom it. Obviously, you know, Katie's coming off the back of playing the World Cup last year, going straight back in with Arsenal, you know, Irish games in between that again, had a tough you know, season or end to the season now coming as well with then
there's no break to
Australia, and then
there's no break.
You know, it just does not make sense in at any level, you know. You know, you can say you can get injured at any point, but I think the risk level, given that she'd be travelling what, 34,000 kilometres round trip, is just out of this world, you know. And I know she is tired, she probably won't tell anybody that, and she's a player that'll just get on with it and she'll play because she loves the game and she loves playing for club and country. But there's no way, you know, she's not superwoman, she is human after all. And look, hopefully some sort of kind of logic comes into play and player welfare, you know, to say that, look, she's, albeit she is a big name at Arsenal, there's just no need for that sort of travel to happen, especially given the big international game she has coming up.
Player welfare is actually what I was going to ask you about, because we see, and it's been documented as well, ACL injuries in women's football and everything
else.
Yeah. And a club like Arsenal then go, and not only for, like, I don't have my green hat on here and saying, oh, listen, our star player is going to be jet lagged coming back for two really crucial and difficult qualifiers. It is a case of players that would have played in the World Cup, and Arsenal are a top team that would have a lot of internationals in their squad, being made travel over for a week after the season.
Given, you know, that there has been five or six of their players in the last year have got those ACL injuries. You know, it all comes down to load, in my opinion, and lack of breaks. You've obviously got the English girls involved as well. And I think it's a case that, look, if they do want the Aussie girls to get over there and play in front of their home crowds as Arsenal, bring a few of the academy players over, bring the three girls over. If they have to stay over there and then get in with the Aussies, actual team, then leave them be. You know, they probably won't be travelling back over this way for a few weeks. But yeah, it just does not make any sense. You know, I'd like to think that the Arsenal physios and the international physios can come to some sort of agreement to say, look, it's just not right.
Well, both qualifiers will be broadcast here on Game On 2FM. Single match tickets for the England game are now available today, because there was some discourse about the match packages together. So with demand high following sales of over 20,000 tickets so far, you can get tickets to the England game, the Aviva Stadium, available now online. And if you can't make it, tune into Game On 2FM. We'll have both matches, France on Friday week in Metz, and then England at the Aviva Stadium. Domestic affairs, Rebecca Cray. We took a break for the Avenir Cup last weekend. Matches in all four groups in that one, and now we are looking forward to a big weekend of League of Ireland Women's Premier Division action. Galway United sit top with two wins from two. They defeated Sligo Rovers 2-0 at the weekend in the Avenir Cup results, and coincidentally they play Sligo again, 5 o'clock on Saturday in the showgrounds. I feel Galway United are just going to continue to win this league. They're never going to concede a goal
never
again.
Lose
this
again.
Is perfect. Like, how long can this go
Don't
on for?
Say that.
How long can this last?
Until they play Shells, let's hope. No, look, they're doing really well. You know, they've not conceded, I think we were saying off here, which is unbelievable. You know, as I said, and I keep saying it, they've just been there or thereabouts in the last few years, and it looks like they're reaping the rewards now. Sligo went down 2-0 against them in the All-Ireland Cup, and sadly for them, we'll have to play them again this week. But look, they may gather themselves and go again and maybe see if they'll get a result.
Are they genuine title contenders?
I think so, yeah. Look, why not? You know, given that the start they've had, yeah, it is a long enough season, but they're shown some good, you know, highlights over the last little while. I've watched some clips of them there over the last few days. They've been playing against Athlone, even, you know, the way they move the ball now, they're so confident in their football ability. You know, they're playing out from the back, they're playing well under pressure, you know, switching the ball when it needs to happen. And I think in the past, Galway have always been that team that, you know, quite dogged, and they're scrappy and they're physical, and similar to Wexford, and, you know, they'll grind results out, or they'll get a draw out of you or whatever it may be, but now they look like they can go and score and they can play the ball, you know. So
Why is that? Is that the new additions that have come in, or is it just a case of the team gelling now?
Yeah, it can be a mix of both. Obviously, they've got Phil Trill is in there, you know, he's brought some fresh ideas after Billy Cleary left. Obviously, you've got the additions of Julianne Russell coming back into the fray. Jenna Slattery has seemed to mature a lot in the last 2 years in her football, you know, football and abilities, and obviously Lindsay McKee has been a mainstay for them as well. So, you know, you've obviously got the lot of the American girls come across as well, studying in Galway to play for them. So I think it's just been an integration of everything. Everything seems to be gelling for them for now anyway. But yeah, a really good start for them. But we'll see how the next few weeks play out.
7:30 on Saturday, Athlone Town versus Shelburne in Lizzie Wullen. Will revenge be on the mind considering how last year's cup final went?
Listen, I'd say the Shelburne girls will be going in, you know, all guns blazing, looking to win every game that they play this year. I don't know if neutrals might think there's a little bit of a bite to this one, just given the fact that they...
Well, is there? Is there? I'd imagine
possibly,
there is. If
yeah,
someone
like
loses
you're
a cup final,
yeah,
and there's going to be clear disappointment.
Most definitely. You need to go and prove a point. And I know that the Shells girls will be looking to do that to try and get a result out of the game on Saturday. But yeah, should be a good one.
Do you feel Shelburne will get a result, Rebecca?
I'd like to hope so.
You like to hope so? Genuinely. Like, I know, listen.
No, look, I obviously am involved there, but I'm quite confident in what I've seen from the girls. You know, they have had a really good pre-season. You know, the games have been really good. I know we got a draw there against Cliftonville at the weekend, but just the spirit amongst the camp, you know, the kind of doggedness that maybe was missing in the past, you know, they don't stop, you know, they surround the ball and they lose it. It's just that final third now, just finishing is kind of maybe one of the things that has been lacking in the maybe one or two of the games that we've had in the last 3 weeks. But yeah, look, they've worked hard all week, and I know that the plan is to go down there and get 3 points.
Well, Athlone have done well in the Cups, and we mentioned before that they were looking to translate that form into the league. It will hopefully be a decent match in Lizzie Wullen Saturday evening, and with a bit of bite to that one. We joked about Galway never conceding a goal and just going to win the league now at a canter. Shamrock Rovers are just going
to
draw every match, so it's
3-1
all draws now in succession. And similar to Galway, they drew with Treaty United in the Avenir Cup, and they're playing Treaty United, albeit at home in Tallaght Stadium on Saturday. They'll want a victory, Rovers.
I'm sure they will, especially on the road. You know, like they didn't get it against Treaty, so they'd be looking to make their stamp now at home when Treaty come up there. But look, Treaty are those dark horses. I don't think anyone maybe was thinking. I think going off, I know previous seasons, Treaty were always that team, maybe in the last kind of, or the other half of the table, but they've dug deep, it seems, in pre-season, and they've brought some new bodies in. I think it's Aaron Van Wilder has done really well in the last two games, has gotten the score sheet for them. But yeah, look, Rovers have a lot to prove now, and I think Amanda Budden might be close to return as well in goal, so that might give them a little bit of a boost of confidence as well. So yeah, interesting to see how that one plays out. 4 o'clock on Saturday.
Yeah, perhaps home advantage might swing it in Rovers' favour. Tala, always a tough place to go. PRL Park, always a tough place to go. And Wexford Utes are on the road to Piemont, who will be looking to bounce back from a Dublin Derby defeat in the last round. And Wexford again, I mean, without a win, one draw, one loss, albeit only two matches played. But again, it's very difficult to know what you would expect from Wexford. These are two teams that will want a big league campaign. Unsure if they'll get it, though.
Yeah, I think these are two teams that have points to prove. You know, they've both started similarly in the campaign. And I think it's always a good affair. You know, you don't know what you're going to get with this one. I think Wexford will be looking to step up when they go to PRL. Piemont will be looking to prove a point to show that, look, they still are there or thereabouts. Both have mediocre starts, but as always, there'll be a scrap, no doubt, to see who comes out on top.
Who is going to come out on top, in your opinion?
I think Piemont might just edge it.
Piemont again, so perhaps home advantage again.
Yeah.
3 o'clock, the first kickoff of the day in Dalymount Park, Bohemian FC Women against Cork City. Bows, they are fourth in the league, one win, one defeat. Cork City, two defeats from two matches. So again, we don't want the case to be kind of the league split in two. We know Treaty and Cork found it difficult last season. Dalymount's a tough place to go to. You would imagine Bows will win this. I suspect, not to put thoughts in your head or words in your mouth, Rebecca, but hopefully Cork will put it up to them.
Yeah, look, hopefully. I think it's great to see them, you know, get the 2-2 draw against Wexford. I think I was a bit fearful they were going to have a season like they did last year. Obviously, the weekend, they did get their draw, albeit it's not the league. You know, they have no points just yet. I don't think they'll overcome Bows, just given that they've had a decent enough start themselves. They look well set up. And obviously, the home advantage then as well. So, yeah, look, hopefully it might be one of those that you might see Cork get a goal or two, but I just can't see them beating Bows, unfortunately.
Okay, we will see how this weekend plays out. Rebecca Cray, thank you very much, as always. As I mentioned, Bows Cork 3 o'clock, Rovers Treaty 4 o'clock, Piemont Wexford and Sligo Galway at 5 o'clock, and then the evening kickoff 7:30 in Lizzie Woolen, a repeat of last year's FAI Cup final, Athlone Town versus Shelburne. Now, before we take a break, it is time to turn our attention to rugby. We will be chatting to Alison Donnelly, previewing round two of the Women's Six Nations after the break, but let's hear from Niamh Jones, talking about the positives that Ireland can take from that opening round match against France.
Yeah, there's loads of positives we can take from that into this week. And I mean, I think we put in a really good performance, both attack and defence. And we've worked on a few things already this week, and we'll fly into Italy.
You must be looking forward to a home game. You know, last week was a bit of a cauldron, as everybody says, but to run out in front of your own fans this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, bringing that home advantage, playing in the RDS. I think it's been 2 years since we've been there. So very excited. And hopefully we'll get a lot of fans there from Ireland, and they'll be backing us.
And what are the specific things you will be working on this week? I mean, the video review is one of those things everybody talks about.
Yeah, you know, there's lots you can do nowadays with analysis, but can't be giving too much away, you know, can't be telling the Italians what we're up to. But yeah, we've worked on lots of positive things this week.
Is this week a lot about yourselves and maybe a bit about Italy, or how does that all fit into place? Because you're a pretty relatively new group kind of working together.
Yeah, I mean, you got to see what the Italians got to bring, but mainly this week we've worked on ourselves. Like I said, we had lots of positives against the French, and we're just going to try and take those into this weekend.
So that was Niamh Jones speaking to her own Michael Corcoran. Stick with us, because Ali Donnelly is standing by to preview a big weekend of Women's Six Nations action. Game on, we are speaking rugby. And I'm delighted to say that Ali Donnelly of scrumqueens.com joins us on the line. Ali, I was wondering, and I was a bit nervous following our last chat last week about how we would start this week. Was it going to be on a negative footing, or were there going to be positives to take from the match against France? Yes, we came out on the wrong side of the result, probably expected. However, there were many, many positives to take from the performance.
Yeah, I think in particular in the way in which we defended, which I think showed, one, that we've been obviously working incredibly hard on that with a new coach. And two, sometimes I think defence allows you to see where a team's at in terms of how much it's going to fight for each other and how it's feeling inside the camp. And I think what the girls could do after that France game, yes, we shipped a few points, but we scored a few too. We put them under pressure. We scored one great try that came directly from defensive pressure. They can look around the changing room and the pitch this week and look in each other's eyes and say, we're making progress here. And that's kind of what you need when you're on this losing streak in this competition, to be able to believe collectively that there's better days to come. And I think we might feel that there are after that performance.
Yeah, that was a huge positive. And I think Declan Danaher touched on it as well, part of the Irish coaching team, that even with the improvements, he was still able to say and happily say in a way that Ireland missed 17 tackles on Saturday, and that's in, compared to more than 40 in their previous meeting with France. So it's those small improvements that show really that the journey that we're on, and we spoke about it last week about the infrastructure changes and everything else that's surrounding this team, but it's those incremental improvements that really stress the journey that we're on.
Yeah, and don't forget, we're playing a very good French team in France in front of 15,000 home fans largely. So I think, it's incremental progress. And, you know, we could talk about that being a frustration because of where we've come from, but that's just where we are. And so, yes, I think that was a decent showing against a good French team. That means there's probably some kind of optimism that we weren't sure would be there going into this game against Italy, which now feels a winnable game.
Another quote he said was, the better we get our attack, our set piece, and continue to grow those areas in attack, it probably takes a little bit of pressure off the defence. And, you know, the soundings from camp is that they have done great work this week. But that's a big thing, that we need to be potent in attack to not just be relying on a defensive powerhouse, really.
Yeah, but you have to get your fundamentals in place, right? So defence is always a good place to start. I don't think we saw much in by way of attack from Ireland. The game plan was clearly to turn France around, put them under pressure with the boot and play a territory game. So I'll be really interested to see if we can start to see what kind of attacking shape the new coaches are putting into this team, because, you know, the good play we had going forward ball in hand, I think players had to come and look for it. You know, we have a very good inside centre in Aoife Dalton, but she didn't get much opportunity, certainly off first phase ball anyway, to have a go. So that will be interesting, because if we want to win games, of course, yes, you can't just rely on a good rear guard. You have to go out and attack the game. So that's, I think, what will be interesting to see this weekend. What do we do when we have the ball that isn't just get your 10 to step back and kick it and put the pressure on at the other end?
What are you expecting this weekend? And what will we do? Will we be potent in attack?
Look, we're going to have to be a little bit more, I think, creative, because clearly, you know, the coaches will have been savvy enough to understand that beating France in France, where this team is on its journey, was probably a goal too far. So they set up defensively. They asked Nicole Fowler to kick the leather off the ball. She did do that in the first half she was on. So, you know, we don't have a box kicking nine either. So I don't think Aoife Riley kicked a ball at all in the game, which is interesting. So I'd like to see us bring Higgins, and if she's playing, hopefully the team hasn't been named yet when we're speaking, but, you know, Higgins and Dalton into the game a bit more. I think Parsons on the wing was a little bit wasted. So the ball she got, you know, lots of players in her face, very limited space. So I think if we want to win the game, we are going to have to play a bit more rugby. Yes, you want to play in good positions on the pitch, and Fowley's very good at putting you in there if he picks her. But, you know, ball in hand is going to be absolutely key, because we're going to have a bit more ball to play with. We didn't have much of the ball against France, and when we did, we kicked it away. So we're going to have to be creative. Otherwise, we'll be talking about sort of moral wins again, which, you know, against Italy at home, you want a bit more than that.
Yeah, we most certainly. I refuse to be talking about moral victories next week, which Ali, hopefully. Honestly, it was 10-0 at half time in Parma, albeit a sluggish start from England. England went on to win 48-0. What do you take from that from an Italian perspective? Like, they were expected to lose to England. England probably off the boil, started slow. So do you read much into it?
I think that actually the performance Italy put in was not that dissimilar to the performance Ireland put in France. They went in clearly with a similar mindset, which is, let's be really hard to beat. We're going to get beaten here. You know, no, they're never going to beat England. Let's be really hard to beat. Let's be dogged. They also really went after England at the breakdown. Not that they, you know, they did win some turnovers on England's ball, which was very interesting. But they also, I think their game plan was, let's slow it down. England always have the fastest ruck speed in the Six Nations. If you could slow them down a bit, they're big, strong physical carriers. You know, they just have that less of a second to come at you. And they did that really well. I think the challenge they've got, unfortunately, is they suffered a couple of really serious injuries to some key players. One of them, Michaela Sillery, who, you know, has broken her leg after the crock roll that Sarah Beckett was sent off for. She is a hugely experienced player in that midfield and is genuinely a very, very big loss for them. They also lost their number 8, who dislocated her shoulder, Julia Kavina, and their captain still out injured. So they are coming a little bit weakened from the team that started against England and a bit beaten up in the same way we were, but they're travelling. So I expect we'll see two quite similar teams. My worry for us, I have to say, is we haven't won a game in this competition for a while now. We're on a losing streak in the Six Nations. They played in WXV2 last year and won games. So, against teams of similar quality to them, which we didn't. So my concern might be if this is very tight and there's 5-10 minutes to go, have they got the muscle memory that might see them over the line that we just haven't quite got in our armoury yet? Hopefully not. But if there's anything that might suggest they would win, it might be that.
When it's all said and done, are we going into this match with confidence or more just hope?
No, I think Ireland should be confident, not least because the foundations that were completely absent defensively last year are clearly there now. There were some very good individual performances, I thought, from a whole range of players. In particular, you know, Hogan and Wafer were brilliant in the back row. I thought Dalton was excellent. Higgins started to grow into the game. It's not easy for the Sevens girls to come back into that kind of congested midfield. And she was finding her feet, quite literally, I think. So they can be very confident about that. And of course, one of the best players we've produced ever, Sam Monaghan, is back in the mix. And she's the co-captain. And so she is a huge boost to us, not just because of what she does around the park, which is outstanding, but she's a leader in the team who's playing at a very, very high level in England. So I think they should be confident. It'll be a real blow not to win because of that confidence that suddenly re-emerged around the team. But I think this is a winnable game. It's not just a cliche thing to say. It is true.
Well, here's hoping for a big performance in the RDS on Sunday, a match you can hear live commentary of on RT Radio 1's Sunday Sport. Elsewhere, Ali, we've seen that France can be vulnerable and Scotland's win over Wales, and Scotland are not just trying, they are playing quite attractive rugby. So it is good to see. Do you think they can put it up to France this weekend?
Yeah, especially because France are away and they are, you know, another cliche that just happens to be true. They're quite an inconsistent team, this French team. They can do wonderful things one week and the next week look unrecognisable. And they've never really kind of ironed that out. And they've got a new set of coaches now and they're still finding their feet. I mean, they weren't brilliant against us in attack. They dropped a lot of ball. Yes, we put pressure on them. But you could see the style of rugby they want to play, which is get in behind that first phase of defence, offload the ball, move the ball quickly. We stopped them from doing that. Scotland play a similar style. France are a better team on paper than Scotland, but they do have to go away and they weren't perfect last week. So, yeah, I think that's one of the more interesting games, I think, this weekend, because you have two attack-minded teams who have players who can do magical things. You know, if you've got Pauline Bourdon-Sansoul in your team, out of nowhere, you might win a game because she can do something magical. But Scotland have those players too, particularly in their back three. So that's a game I'm really looking forward to watching.
I mentioned France are vulnerable and probably unfair to say the same for England. It's more that they have new coaches. It's adopting a new style of play. Are England still off an 80-minute performance because they're still trying to click? So it might be a bit scrappy against Wales.
Yeah, but they should still have too much to do it. I mean, if you watch that, I mean, I think you would have got very short odds on that game against Italy being nil all after, 25 minutes or so. And I think England, they had the possession, they had the territory. They're just lacking a bit of finesse in this kind of new style that he wants them to play. So I wouldn't worry too much that England are off the boil because they're still too good to beat teams. You know, they went out and thrashed them in the second half. I don't think Wales have a realistic opportunity of beating them. But perhaps Italy showed them a bit of a playbook. If you put pressure on the breakdown, if you are dogged and if you accept that you're going to be defending and you relish it, then you might do okay against them. And actually, Wales are the kind of team you don't want to get into a dogfight with Wales. And Scotland got themselves dragged into that a little bit and then it was tense at the end, even though they were the better team. So, you know, that'll be an interesting game. It's in front of a really big crowd down in Bristol, right across the border. So I think it will be a fun game, but I can see England, even if they struggle to score early on, doing anything other than winning comfortably. They're just too good.
A final question for you, Ali, and it's quite a broad one. So this weekend, Saturday, Scotland, France, 2:15 in Hive Stadium. England, Wales, Ashton Gate, as you mentioned, in Bristol, 4:45. And then Easter Sunday in the RDS in the south side of Dublin, Ireland, Italy. Results probably went the way that many people expected in week one, yet there was still a lot of entertainment. Are we expecting to see proper big clashes this weekend across the board in the Six Nations?
I think we'll have two tight games, and I think our game will be tight. I can't see anything other than that game, Ireland-Italy, being a close game, and that should be exciting, especially because, you know, if you're an Irish fan, you're supporting a team on a journey, and that, you know, that can sound a bit naff, but it's true and it's interesting. You know, you can start to see the seeds of a team growing, so that'll be exciting. France, Scotland, you know, Scotland, France were favourites for sure, but I think that could be tight. I don't know. I think whenever England play, the result is just such a foregone conclusion that it makes, you have to find something else interesting as a fan there. And I guess for Wales, it's how do we pick ourselves up from such a disappointing performance against Scotland? You know, I spent a little bit of time yesterday with Lynn Cantwell, who is here in the UK at the moment with South Africa, and they had some training games, and she was saying, you know, Wales looked the real deal when they trained against them. So maybe they just had an off day, and what might be interesting is to see how they pick themselves up. But look, the Six Nations is always about who can catch England. And I don't think it's going to be Wales, unfortunately.
Okay, well, here's hoping for plenty of entertainment over the Easter weekend. For now, Ali Donnelly of scrumqueens.com, thanks so much for taking the time.
Game on. Rugby.
So, a big weekend of rugby to look forward to. A big year ahead in cycling. And I'm delighted to say that Shane Stokes, cycling journalist, joins us on the line now to go through, basically, who to be keeping an eye on, what's the latest news, what's the situation in the world of cycling. And Shane, first and foremost, thank you very much for taking the call. And let us begin.
No worries, you're very welcome.
Our conversation with Sam Bennett, because that is a gentleman that you've spoken to recently. He's in his first year with a new team. He was signed up as a big sprinter. However, form's been good, results not so good.
Yeah, that's right. He's joined the Decathlon AGT Orla Mondial team. You might remember in 2020, he won two stages in the green jersey in the Tour de France. And then the following year, started very well, but then had a knee injury, and since then has missed the tour because of that injury in 2021. And then since then, he hasn't consistently hit top form for various reasons. He had COVID at least once. He had a slight recurrence of the knee injury as well. So for various reasons, he hasn't consistently hit top form. And he felt last year that he would have been in shape for the tour. His team didn't have faith in him. So he's moved to the Decathlon AGT Orla Mondial team over the winter and is one of their big leaders and was brought on board to win. Now, that's proven a little more elusive than was expected. He's going very well. He's climbing very well. He's performing well in recent Grand Prix, the Denain, which has cobblestones in it. He rode very well in that. But he hasn't been, you know, he's had several good placings, a second, a fourth, a sixth and an eighth, but hasn't won a race yet. And that's really where he's at.
Do you feel he can translate that form into ultimately positive end results?
Yeah, definitely. He's with a new coach, another Irish person called Stephen Barrett is his coach this year. And there's been a little bit of getting to know each other because Stephen has achieved, he works with the English-speaking riders on that French team and has achieved a stage win with three different riders in the last 3 years of the tour. So he's got a very good record as a coach. He hasn't worked with a sprinter like Sam Bennett before, so there's a little bit of learning. And also when you move teams, as Sam does, it just takes a while to get to know each other, you know, for him to get to know the team and, importantly, to get to know the riders that will be giving him the lead out. You know, the lead out and sprints are really, really important. So there's been a bit of that. And then the other thing is that Sam said that while his aerobic form is really good, he hasn't done the gym work or enough of the gym work that gives him the anaerobic, which is what a sprinter thrives on, is the anaerobic effort. Which is what's crucial inside that last kilometre. He hasn't done enough gym work because of all the building he was doing and because of quite a busy race programme. And he's backing off now in these weeks he'll be doing a good bit of gym work. He'll be stepping up the gym work. And he thinks that by the start of May that he should be in much better sprinting form and that will translate into wins.
Is there any fear that the injury might hamper Sam getting back to his best?
I don't think so. No, I don't think it's an injury issue at this point. I think he's, it's literally just, I mean, he hasn't ridden, he rode the Vuelta a España a couple of years ago, but he hasn't consistently ridden, he hasn't ridden other Grand Tours, so just that Vuelta. So that's a little bit of an impediment, because Grand Tours really are a great foundation for the next year. But I think it is. I think, you know, there's very good signs. The way he's climbing this year is very good, and just his aerobic fitness is really good. It's a question of getting that top end, which is always important for a sprinter. So I think it should fall into place. I don't envisage any issues. It's taking a bit longer than was expected, but I think that they will sort it all out.
Well, hopefully it does click for Sam with his new coach, Stephen, and indeed his new team. For those wanting to read more on Sam Bennett's story, Shane Stokes does have a very informative article on the RT Sport website. But Shane, let us speak about another Irish rider who was tipped for big, big things, and that is first-year pro Archie Ryan. This is a name that we hopefully will be hearing plenty of not only in the future, but in the coming months.
Yeah, exactly. Archie is 22. He was living in Rathmichael in County Dublin, and moved a few years ago to between Newtown and Kendy and Roundwood. And he is a really good climber. He's a very light guy. He's listed at 56 kilos, like, so he's a pure climber. And just a really, really good, promising. He's had a lot of very good amateur results. He was picked up by the EF Education Easy Post team, which has a history of Irish riders like Dan Martin and others, Ryan Mullen and Ben Healy last year, who's also with the team this year. He's with that team, and in his first season, started off very well in Australia early on in the year, just with some aggressive showings. But then last week was riding the Settimana Internazionale Coppi Bartali, which is a bit of a mouthful. It's a stage race in Italy, and won stage four, and finished second overall in that race, and indeed might have won the race. He was, I think it was 9 seconds was the difference between him and the winner. The last stage didn't have climbs near the finish, which is what Archie needs, and that's how he won stage four, was just by dropping everybody else on the final climb. And had he had a tougher final stage, he could well have won overall. But to take second in that race in your first year as a pro was really, really impressive. And he's definitely a name to watch.
Yeah, definitely a name to watch. As you mentioned, only 22 years of age. How good can he be? Like, can he be great, I suppose, is my question.
Yeah, I think based on what he's done, I mean, he's won stages in the Tour de l'Avenir, the Ronde de Lizard, which are both really, really important amateur races. He was fourth overall in the Tour de l'Avenir, and the Tour de l'Avenir is seen as regarded as a kind of an under 23 version of the Tour de France. He was fourth overall there, and had been having knee issues, so he's been held back, like Sam, I suppose, but he's had knee issues in recent seasons. So when he finished fourth overall there, and indeed when he won a stage last year, he was coming back from knee injuries and didn't quite have the base that he would otherwise have had. So I think just looking at what he's done so far, he was second in the under 23 Il Lombardia Classic last year as well. Should have won it, was blocked in the sprint by the rider he was on in a breakaway with. He's just class. Everything he's done is class. And I do think he's a guy that, all going well, that you'll see in the mountain stages of the Tour de France and the major races. That'll take, you know, to be up in the Tour de France. He probably won't ride the Tour de France, I'd say, for probably another, say, 2 years anyway. His team will probably put him in the Giro d'Italia or Vuelta a España next year. But definitely he's the kind of guy that could become a Grand Tour contender.
Well, very good to hear the progress of Archie Ryan, albeit at the early stages of his career. Eddie Dunbar suffered what he thought was a fractured bone in his hand. However, results then came out that it wasn't as bad as first suspected, which is good news for Eddie Dunbar, good news for Irish cycling, Shane.
That's right, yeah. And there's a link between Eddie and Archie, actually, because Eddie won the race we just spoke about, the Settimana Coppi Bartali. Eddie won that 2 years ago, while, you know, he's been a pro for several years. So I suppose for Archie to get second in that in his first year, it just shows, because Eddie is a very good rider, and that Archie is already almost at that level is really great. But yeah, Eddie last year crashed in his first race of the year and suffered a broken hamate, a fractured hamate bone, which is a small bone in the hand. recovered from that. Took a long time to get back. He did a lot of indoor training. Watching rugby actually is his preferred preferred distraction while doing working on the indoor trainer. And he went on to finish seventh in the Giro d'Italia. He was sitting fourth overall with 2 days to go and then fell ill and slipped back to seventh, but still a brilliant performance. And this year had more bad luck. He crashed on the opening stage of the UAE Tour on February 19th and thought that he'd fractured a bone in his hand. And then more recently, they discovered that it was just a badly bruised bone in his hand. And he has been working again on the indoor trainer. This time he went to altitude in Isola, in the Franco-Italian border, and has been working hard there, and will line out in the GP Miguel Indurain on Sunday and then do the Itzulia Basque country stage race on Monday. And basically he feels he's on track for the Giro d'Italia. He's slightly ahead of where he was last year, notwithstanding the injury issues this year. And is hoping to build on last year's Giro and to do better again.
Okay, good stuff. Well, here's hoping for a big weekend, or a big year, I should say, for Irish cycling. A big weekend for Eddie Dunbar. He's racing on Saturday and then will line out and the Basque Country Stage race starting on Monday. Injury seems to be very topical this evening. Further afield, Belgian star Wout van Aert. He's going to be out for a while, Shane.
That's right, yeah. He's one of the best riders in the world. He's not a climber, but he has done very well in races. He's won 9 stages of the Tour de France and the green jersey. And followers of the sport will know him as just being kind of one of the big stars of the sport. He does cyclocross in the winter, and he curtailed his cyclocross program and indeed his early road racing program this year to get ready for the classics. He's won Milan-San Remo in the past, and he's won the Amstel Gold Race, but has never won the Tour of Flanders and never won Paris-Roubaix, which are, for his type of rider, are kind of the races that he'd be expected to win. So he's staked everything on winning those this year, went off an altitude training camp, held back from racing to do that, and then crashed yesterday in the Dwars Tour of Landerin race and suffered multiple fractures and will be out for weeks. So, yeah, it's just a reminder, I suppose, of how fraught, how dangerous the sport can be, and how luck is important. He did nothing wrong yesterday. He was in the right place and everything, but just it happened. And as a result, he missed the race on Sunday. Will miss the Paris-Roubaix, which was his other key target, as was the Giro d'Italia, and he looks set to miss that as well. So, yeah, it's pretty bad luck.
Well, it can all change so quickly. For now, Shane Stokes, cycling journalist, gentlemen, as always, thank you for that chat. We are taking a short break. Then, Jeff Shepherd is joining us with his Eye on America.
Eye on America.
Now, Jeff Shepherd is on the line with his Eye on America. And, Shep, we are going to begin our conversation chatting about a few Irish lads trying to make their way in the NFL. Regular listeners to the show will have heard Damien Lawler updating us every Wednesday evening on the progress of Monaghan's Rory Began, Down's Charlie Smith and Wicklow's Mark Jackson, as well as ex-Connacht rugby player Dara Leader, and indeed former Welsh rugby star Lewis Rees-Zammit. However, I want to focus on Down's Charlie Smith, because Shep, Charlie Smith is going to be linking up for now with the New Orleans Saints tomorrow, I believe. So, you know, what better man to chat than a Saints fan, Shep?
not even just a Saints fan, a Saints season ticket holder.
Oh, super fan.
That's right, a super fan. No, I mean, look, you know, Shane, we've talked about, you know, on this program the last, you know, several years, the things that the NFL has been doing to expand its game and its fandom beyond, you know, the shores of America. And so, you know, they've been playing football games in London now. I mean, it's got to be a decade at least, you know. And they've played several games in Germany. They've played games in Mexico City. They've played some games in Canada every once in a while. So, you know, I mean, again, they've moved around, you know, and then they've supported the NFL Europe and all these different things. I mean, and it seems like they're starting, you know, in the world of social media, where you can kind of maybe have some more individualistic experiences with fans and teams and different things. It's, you know, they're targeting and starting up these different programs. And so they've got the international player pathway, which is something that, you know, they developed a couple of years ago, and it just kind of been adding to it. And it's like the easiest way to get fans of Ireland or Australia or some of these other countries around the world interested in the game is to have a player from that country be in a football game. I mean, I know it's easy and it sounds simple. It's obviously hard to make an NFL team, but, you know, if you think back to some of the, you know, great, you know, American Samoan players that are from the, you know, Pacific Islands. I mean, you know, American football is now a huge down there because they've had players that have gotten into the league. And so now you've got a guy from like Charlie Smith, who was supposed to work out with the New Orleans Saints today in the kicking position. Had some flight logistics issues and some things were delayed. So it's now going to be pushed to tomorrow. But now he gets an opportunity to, you know, be on the roster. Look, the world of kicking, and look, Shane, we joke about this. You know, your NFL fandom is still, you know, blossoming and you're learning about the game. The position of kicker is quite fickle. You could be the toast of the town one week, and then you could be, you know, tarred and feathered the following week. And so, you know, you have a couple of bad games in a row as an NFL kicker. And I mean, you know, this is real money. This is, you know, these are people's livelihoods that are involved in these games. You're not going to be around town if you have, you know, you can't go a month and just be the worst kicker in the league. It's going to be a problem. And so for the Saints to have identified Charlie and his talent to say, look, we want you to come work out with us. We're going to invest some time into you. And so they have, you know, the league now, you have the ability to add a 17th roster spot on your practice squad if it goes to an international player. And so what that means is you've got the 53-man roster that dresses out on Sundays or whenever your game is that week, and then you've got the practice squad players that work out with you, but they don't dress out and they don't participate on Sundays. And now you can add one roster spot if the player is international. And so, I mean, look, let's just say, you know, let's say Charlie makes the team and the Saints kicker, Blake Groupie, something happens to him in warmups or, you know, the night before the game and Charlie's there. Charlie could get called up and be kicking the next day, you know, for the Saints if he's successful and they decide that they want to hold on to him. So the whole, you know, idea behind this is, you know, you want to have players near a team with the opportunity to be developed and potentially play. And so that's what Charlie's kind of, you know, he's involved in right now.
Big news, and just on that, the technicality, I suppose, Lewis Rees-Zamet will be signing with the Kansas City Chiefs, which is massive, absolutely massive. But because he has come through the International Pathway Program pathway, he won't count against the 90-player roster. And if he makes the practice squad, he wouldn't count against the 16-player limit.
Right, right. That's exactly right. And yeah, so he would count as that additional extra player. And so what that means is, you know, you're on your practice squad, you know, teams can protect those players and not everybody has an opportunity to maybe go sign him. But look, let's just say, look, you know, I wrote down some notes about Louis. He ran a 4.4 in the 40-yard dash. Okay, so he is flying. I mean, he is booking it when it comes to, you know, running. And so what could you never have enough of in the NFL? Speed, you know? So what are the Kansas City Chiefs known for? You know, Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. You know, one of the issues that they struggled with last year was wide receivers catching the football and Patrick Mahomes getting the ball downfield. So, look, I don't know what his hands, you know, are like when it comes to catching a football, but he's playing rugby. He's fast. He can probably take a hit. So I think there's, you know, they're going to take a flyer on him and just try to develop him. Maybe he just starts running back kicks and running back punts to start things going on, you know, in his NFL career. And if he can provide value like that for the Kansas City Chiefs, I mean, that is an unbelievable weapon to have for an NFL team.
It most certainly is. You mentioned my NFL fandom is in its infancy. Well, the New York Jets must have been listening to Game On because they've been awarded rights to expand their brand and activities for Ireland as part of NFL's Global Markets programme. So there's going to be lots more Jets fans in Dublin. However, Shep, before I let you go, I do want to turn our attention to baseball and the story of one of their superstars and the curious case of a missing $4.5 million.
So this is a wild story, Shane. So, you know, we've talked before about Shohei Ohtani, who signed. He went from the Los Angeles Angels. He moved across town to play for the Dodgers. So the news surfaced this past week. The Dodgers were in Korea. They were opening up the season in Korea. They were playing the San Diego Padres. And after one of the games, they had a team meeting, and it was announced that you know, there was going to be a bad story coming out because Shohei Ohtani's interpreter, who was also a Japanese person, has been involved in some gambling and some sports gambling, and he has had to pay back some money to someone who is actually being, you know, indicted by the U.S. federal government. Well, it turns out this was the first time that Shohei Ohtani had been had learned about this, because apparently the interpreter had allegedly been lying to him about what was going on. And so the interpreter was fired, and now they're looking into what exactly is going on. But this is an absolutely wild story that has captivated American sports for the better part of a week now.
Well, on that bombshell, Jeff Shepherd, gentlemen, thank you so much for taking the call. That is all we have time for. Big thanks to Andrew O'Connor and Laurie Davis for working on this evening's show. Stay tuned to 2FM, because Beto da Silva is up next with some great, great tunes. I'll be back at 6 o'clock tomorrow. So from all of the Game On team, it is bye for now.